Today on another chilling episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, when a young woman decides to spend the night at her grandmother's home deep in the swamps of Louisiana, she doesn't so much fear ghosts as she does the creatures that roam the wetlands in the dark. That all changes when late in the night, she realizes there is something more than just her and grandma shuffling through the halls at night. Something that cannot be explained. Something that may be out for her soul. Those stories and more, today on this chilling episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802, our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in 24/7 and share your ghost stories with us. If you like the show, how about getting all of our shows ad free? Get advanced episodes like a month in advance about all of the archive that's fallen off of iTunes and Spotify and all that. Thousands of episodes. Literally the world's largest audio archive of ghost stories. We got it. And you can too. All you got to do to become an extra podcast person, an EPP, sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. You get all that, plus a weekly bonus episode with some of our scariest stories on that are released exclusively for you guys every single week on Thursdays. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to get in on all of that. Tony and Carol with you on today's episode of the program. What's going on?
Well, as you know, I just got a kitten, and it's 7 weeks old. And in the last 5 minutes, my 3-year-old cat and that one have started kind of interacting. So things get a little crazy. Just a warning. But like, you were one of the first people I texted. That's my dog getting in on the action. But so I texted you this really, really adorable picture of my kitten the other day when I got him.
Yeah.
His name's Izzy. He's super cute. And you said, I said, isn't he so sweet? And you said, it's a shame he's a Russian sympathizer. So now every time I look at my little adorable kitten, I think, oh, but he's a Russian sympathizer.
Exactly. You got to watch out for your animals.
Only Tony Bruschi would look at that picture of an adorable kitten and say, yeah, but it's a Russian sympathizer.
Hey, I just call it like it is. When Harper was a baby, I was in
when she used to be a Russian
communist. We were in we were at the restaurant called Granite City. I don't know if they're around anymore. And we were waiting for a table. She was in her little carrier, and all the waitresses. Well, yeah, there were some waitresses. There was a waitress stand, and the hostess. They're probably 14, 15, 16 years old. And then, oh, such a cute baby and everything. And I said, yeah, but she's a communist. And just like that. And
she might be cute.
And communist. They're like, and they didn't know what that even meant, which bravo American education system. And they were like, oh, how cute. And then they called our table. And as we were walking to our table, I looked back and the girls were talking to some of the other waitresses who walked over. They're pointing at my daughter. They're like, that little girl's a communist. And there was like this older gentleman who probably was like 75 that was like standing next to the place because there was no place to sit. And he looks at these girls who are like I said, 50, they're high school girls. So they're like, that baby's a communist. That's the cutest communist baby. And there's Harper just like, yeah.
I'm a communist.
And the thing is, you do shit like that and she would laugh. Like she knew, I don't know. She's always gotten the absurd, and it was kind of scary how much she would laugh at things where it's like, how do you even know what we just said? And
it's really funny.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So, I mean, it explains a lot of how she is today because she's been brainwashed from an early age.
Oh my God, that makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And the fact that girls are like, oh my God, she's communist, thinking like she's French.
Exactly. That's why I said it, because I'm like, these girls will have no idea what this word means. And it's going to sound completely insane when they start pointing at my child saying, oh, what a cute communist.
That makes me laugh.
It was great. And I'm sure that old man like was still like, what the hell is happening to this world? Little babies are coming. Girls are putting.
Damn communists these days.
They're invading. Starting with that little redhead. It was great.
They look all cute, but they're commies.
It'd been great if I had like a hammer and sickle like on the side of her her carrier at the time. Oh, 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our first story of the day. It says, I want to tell you about a time in my life where ghosts were very active. I'm a 34-year-old now. When I was younger, around 96 to 99, I would often stay at my grandmother's home. These stories took place in Destrehan, Louisiana, 30 minutes outside of New Orleans. The land my grandmother's home is on used to be a plantation. If you Google Destrehan, Louisiana plantations, there are lots and lots of articles in the history, as well as active plantation homes that used to be used or that they now use for weddings. When I go stay at my grandparents' home, things would start off fine. Once they went to bed and I was just me in the living room watching TV, it would get kind of cozy. It started off with clocks ticking really loudly. My grandparents had all kinds of clocks in their rooms. They were obsessed with them. They had grandfather clocks, cuckoo clocks, and regular wall clocks. The ticking would be so loud if I ignored it. Next thing that would happen would be the sound of pots and pans falling in the kitchen. Dishes, silverware. I'd sneak around the corner of the living room and peer into the kitchen. And of course, no dishes were on the floor. My grandparents would never get up and check on me. They must not have heard anything. The next thing that would happen was the TV would start to change channels without me even touching the remote. I get enough of it all. The sounds, channel changing, and say, please leave me alone. Finally, at that point, things would kind of calm down. This happened for many years. Another story in that same home in the 1980s, told by my mother. My mother told me a story from when she was a teenager in that house. Ghost liked to mess with her as well. She was getting ready to go on a date. She went and got in the shower. While she was in the bathroom, she heard her name called two times. She stepped out in a towel, thinking that it was her stepbrother calling out. She called for him with no response. The voice that called her name sounded just like him. He was not home. She found out later that he was actually at work. She went into the kitchen and saw a face with red glowing eyes in the aquarium by the back door. At that point, she got dressed, left the house, and out the front door. Many times she'd hear her name being called when she was alone. She'd hear cabinets banging, pots and pans falling, anything to get her attention. Last story I have about this home is when I was 3 or 4 years old. My family said I would talk about a little girl named Anna. She had a yellow antebellum dress on. Multiple family members had witnessed me and her rolling a ball across the floor of the kitchen. I don't remember her, but my mom said I talked about her all the time. My step cousin played with her too. She was about 7 years younger than me. When he was still alive, my grandfather refused to stay in the house, but my grandmother was not home. I do not know if things happened while she's home. She's never told me any stories. She's now in her 80s and lives there alone. My grandfather passed away earlier this year. I appreciate everything you guys do. For all your listeners, thank you for the opportunity to share the stories with you. I've been an EPP for a few years now. And I listen every day at work. If you're not an EPP already, make sure to sign up. It's awesome. Thanks, Emily in Louisiana. Thoughts on all that haunted grandma house stuff?
So, but the grandma still lives there?
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Grandma lives there.
Like with all that stuff that happens, it just is like, does it not happen to the grandma, or it does happen and the grandma just doesn't care, or it's just like, I don't get how you could, if you do live there and you experience that kind of stuff, how would you ever get used to that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that.
I mean, there's two things that, you know, could possibly be going on.
Communism. Or three things, probably.
Communism. That is one of the options. Very true. Another possibility is
Audio Jungle.
Without anyone knowing, Grandma may be practicing the dark arts. Yes, she makes the best French toast. But where does a French toast come from? What exactly is ground up into that meal? Is it the bones of those who once worked the land? Now, encapsulated with fresh maple syrup on a summer's day that you can have on the porch with a Werther's Original. Werther's Original.
I don't know where the hell you're going. Of course you tied in Werther's Original. Of course.
Sit down with a nice glass of cool lemonade. Grandma brings it out on the tray. Everyone, eyes lights up. Fresh lemonade. Have some, they say. Grandma just made it. Yes. Have some. Grandma just made it. I don't know if I want any. Grandma just made you lemonade. Drink your lemonade. But I don't like the lemon. Don't let Grandma down now.
Hi, sweetie. I made you lemonade.
But what is this? Is that... Oh my God, is that an eyeball?
It's not an eyeball. That's just an ice cube that has a pupil and an iris that happens to look just like your grandfather's before he cheated on me with Pastor Milfy.
Milfy?
They said they were just in the sacristy sipping on some wine and crackers. I found out later they had a torrid love affair. And then Grandpa didn't come home. But have some lemonade.
Drink Grandma's lemonade. Drink Grandma's lemonade. Drink Grandma's lemonade. Drink Grandma's lemonade.
That was some classic Tony riffing.
Did you like that?
Yeah.
Total bit.
It was well produced and unexpected. And like, I don't know, that was some of your better work. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's just, you know,
the user, poor grandma's probably just a sweetheart. You just turned her into a murderer. Who makes lemonade?
Until she found out about Grandpa, and then everything changed.
And she lived in a creepy ass plantation home.
Exactly.
How could those plantation homes, like, not be creepy ass homes? When you think about it.
And here's what I guess I have a little difficulty understanding. And I know they're all over the South, and they are genuinely
beautiful
aesthetically beautiful homes. Beautiful landscapes. I think it's really cool how a lot of them have been preserved, and we can see what they once looked like. But at the same time, it's like a lot of kind of, you know, I mean, in some cases there was happy shit here and happy shit there, but it's like we're talking about a piece of land that was a plantation.
Well, and probably there was a lot of happy shit for some people who lived there.
Yeah.
But there was a whole nother group of people that they owned.
I know. It just kind of makes it a little rather odd. Is like, let's go celebrate our wedding here. I don't know.
Where people were owned and, owned and abused and raped and beaten and worked.
I know.
They worked them, you know. It's kind of like how people own a horse in some ways, you know, a working horse that, you know, that they're training. So it's constantly working this horse.
Yeah. I don't know. You just got to
actually, it's much worse. People, you know, people were treated
far worse. Yes, we're talking horses. About people. Yes, but yeah, I mean, it's just what I'm saying is the just the setting. I mean, I don't know. I get the aesthetics of it, but I guess you have to like pretend the history didn't happen. Then if you're gonna be cool with that, I don't know. I wouldn't want to start my. Like the beginning of that part of my life or relationship with someone where you're making that commitment to one another at a place where that sort of shit went down. I just think there's a lot of negative energy that's not a good spot to do it. You know, use it for the history. Yes, it should be there for history. Tours, all that, you know, fuck, make the gardens pretty and you can walk around and see them. You know, but I don't know that I really, that's a you know, energy wise.
Yeah, I can appreciate the building, which was probably built by this.
Exactly.
This
yeah.
You know, I can appreciate all that and their marvelous, spectacular homes.
Yeah.
I just think it would be, because how could you not get negative energy from a home like that?
I think I'd rather get married in a graveyard, honestly, than a plantation. Now, I don't want to get married in a graveyard, but I feel like a graveyard.
I was going to say, if you get married again, I'm going to talk you out of that.
I know. There's no way she would go for that. But no, I can't imagine a plantation. That just doesn't seem like an option. Let's go over to...
I better be your best man, by the way. Just saying.
I could see that. Ahead. I could see that. So you just have to, you know, have a little glass of lemonade. Uh, 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. It says, hey guys, listen to you and noticed that you're always saying you should share stories of Christmas gifts we all had when we were kids. I hadn't had a gift I didn't have a gift that did that, but there was a younger family member who had a high attachment to the gift. Okay, I don't know what that means. I'm not sure who bought him the gift, but it was a puppy dog, like a teddy bear that he got, and he'd run around with it all the time. This was the time he just finished doing the potty training, and we were all kind of thinking he was just a happy youngster, so we'd let him enjoy the fun. If we had to drive or go somewhere away from home, he would never leave the home without his stuffed animal. He was one of the children who liked having any imaginary friend, so we would play along with him, and he was having so much fun. I would take care of him. And he never made it a problem, so we could keep doing it. I thought of it like he was the Charlie Brown character with the blanket. So I think it made him feel normal, and he was very respectable as a child. When he had to attend a regular school, he would take the puppy dog toy along with him whenever he would go to school. He refused leaving the home without it, so my cousin let him because he didn't want to make arguments or make him feel all that bad. This became a concern later when he got older and the other children were making fun of him. He was a very good kid and made good grades, but he wouldn't leave the home. This day, he's always been a good man, but we always had to make him go away from his toy to deal with school. I know that people have those attachments, but this was his. It was 5 years that we took away his toy, that he was a wreck of something. He wasn't happy, threatened. He would put a knife to himself and be suicidal, but we all kept telling him not to do it. And after those years, he became an 18-year-old adult and went directly back to having his puppy and dog around. From the mental aspect, he was not normal for this situation. We also tried to fake the toy he had, but he knew the toy. There was something about it that made him know it, and even if we could try to fool him, it was impossible. When he was a youth, maybe of 16 years of age, he would ask his toy dog. He was predicting what would happen even before he would leave the home. It was like he had a psychic power of telling his peers that they would get in trouble if he didn't go with them. It sounded stranger because he didn't use it asking for money or anything. So it made us listen more. This is why I don't think it was a bad spirit, and he made good decisions. We asked if it could speak with us. He said it told us we couldn't have the same relationship with his puppy dog. He told us his puppy dog was not an angel or a demon, but it was just doing its job to protect its master. That cousin doesn't remember it too clearly, but said he felt like he was protecting something. This made him feel that since dogs are territorial, that where he lived was what he protected. And my cousin was his master at the time. Nobody was hurt, but the dog made sure to keep him safe. I was worried it was just an object and not a living pet, so it scared us all. This was a gift he received, and his child mind could make things up, but this child was well-reserved. He was never known to lie, but I think his puppy dog was very close to him, and it never made him do anything wrong. I think of his puppy dog like the Johnny Five from the Short Circuit movie, because to him it was very real, but he says it wasn't what he invented. I still think it was his imagination, so I'm in the situation of supporting him, but thinking he may have some of those issues. I still have to admit that his imaginary friend was good and he grew up to be a very good person. I don't know what it was with the toy, but it made him make good decisions, almost like being someone we could look up to who does the right thing. I think it was a good toy. Thanks for reading. Hope you have a good day and love the show. A couple times I was trying to decipher what was being written, but I think we got the gist of the story. Interesting. I mean, there's a lot of aspects of this where I look at it and go, I wonder if there was a trauma in his life early on, and then that puppy dog became such a piece of comfort, and it was the only consistent thing that he had going on. And that's how a child could get that attached to something, through that sort of a occurrence. Also, I mean, another thing that could happen, or not necessarily happen, but it could just be, yes, there could be some sort of mental thing going on there that is undiagnosed that would also cause one to act that way. But if he's predicting the future, I don't know what that is.
I mean, was he legit predicting the future?
It sounded like it. He didn't give any examples, but he said it sounded like he was, you know, really kind of telling people things before they happened.
Because it definitely sounds like a spectrum sort of issue. I know some kids who are autistic and they use the object. Mm-hmm. It's more like a toy.
Yeah.
And they kind of speak through it.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's like the toy is the one talking in their heads, like they tell it to talk and then it talks,
mm-hmm.
but it's not really.
Yeah.
But in an unusual attachment to a toy. So, I mean, that kind of wouldn't be unusual for someone to be really attached to a toy. But if they are telling things that are happening in the future, that's unusual.
That's a little unusual. I had that same sort of attachment. I have my Baron bunny, and I literally wore the fur off of them several times because I would always be hugging them and holding them. And I had them like close to me, like at least till I was, you know, five on a regular basis. And then they'd always be in my bed at night. Now they're in my storm room in like the box of things I can't replace.
Because, oh, I think that's sweet.
Yeah, they are still like I'll be buried with them. But they were like, I was an only child, so they were very, very close to me. And so I get the whole object thing. You know, I've suspected for a very long time that I'm Asperger's, to a very high functioning version of it, but it explains a lot of my personality and a lot of the ways that I perceived things and the ways I acted as a child, you know, without being diagnosed or anything like that. But I mean, that's one of those things where I always kind of thought it more to be a superpower, but it does. I mean, you think in different ways and you don't really get how other people don't think like that. But as I've gotten older and understood this more, that's ways you can go, oh, okay, just different perspective. I kind of grasp it. But it's an interesting thing with objects because sometimes you'll be more attached to them than people.
Well, and if your object can predict the future, that is a great superpower.
I wish I had those.
Yeah. Or isn't it? I mean,
yeah, I knew Teddy Ruxpin was pretty solid on that. And he was predicting the future a lot. But, you know, I always wanted a Teddy Ruxpin. You know what I'm talking about? The toy that like it was the bear that could talk.
Like a little bear.
Yeah. You put a cassette tape in him. And the funny part of the ones in the 80s, you could put any cassette tape in him and he would talk. So if you wanted to, you could like tape Miss Cleo off the TV and then put that in Teddy Ruxpin. And then suddenly Teddy Ruxpin's, Miss Cleo, I'm telling your fortune. It was great. But I never got a Teddy Ruxpin ever. Wanted one. No Teddy Ruxpin.
Your parents were afraid they'd get you one and you never put it down.
I don't know. But you know what happened later in life when I was about 19? I'd already moved out. My dad goes, I found a Teddy Ruxpin. And what he found actually was an entire store display from like a Toys R Us that had like the Teddy Ruxpin and all the other characters on it. And it sat in their attic for years. And I asked them about it recently. I said, where is that display? Because I think it'd be kind of cool. Like, oh, we sold it.
You did?
Yeah, we sold it for like $25 on Craigslist.
Oh, man.
Like, $25? And I'm like, and I looked it up. I'm like, these things go for thousands of dollars because they're rare. They're store displays. They're like, well, and I point this out. I'm like, do you realize how much? Well, nobody was buying it at 50. So. Yeah.
Oh, but your parents.
That's the sort of shit you can find on Craigslist when people don't know what they're selling. Or they do and they don't care.
A lot of parents are like that. It's like, it doesn't mean anything to us.
But it's funny because my mom was always really big on like, collect this because someday it'll be worth money. And like most of that shit was never, ends up being worth absolutely nothing or very little. But like, there's been some things where it's like, oh, that's extremely rare and collectible. They're like, that. What are you doing? What? You're taking like, what the? Yeah, I get speechless quite often there. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go over to a phone call and hear another ghost story.
Hi.
Before I get to my story, just wanted to tell you that I was listening to a recent episode where the Babadook was mentioned. I'd never heard of the Babadook before, so I looked it up. And I'd say about 40 minutes after looking it up and hearing it on your podcast, I was watching the Sunday, March 6th episode of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He mentioned the Babadook in that show. Going from never hearing about the Babadook to hearing that word twice in less than an hour on a Monday morning or Monday afternoon, that was weird. That was definitely weird. Anyway, the story that I have has to do with a shadowy figure. I was a chaperone on a school trip with my wife's grade 7 and 8 class to Ottawa, the capital of Canada. And as a way of making for kind of a cool experience, but also saving a few bucks, we stayed at a local hostel. The hostel in Ottawa is located in the old Ottawa jail that dates back to the 1850s and early 1900s and is the site of the last public hanging in Canadian history. It's also reputed as the most haunted building in Ottawa. I went in there as a bit of a paranormal enthusiast and certainly looking for things and hoping I'd see things. Didn't experience anything until probably our third or fourth day there. I was walking up the main staircase to our floor, the men's floor of the hostel, and my right peripheral area, some kind of black shadowy thing. I turned around to see if I could see anything else, and I didn't. And so I just sort of wrote it off as something in my periphery, no big deal. And when I got home, I started looking up a little bit of the paranormal history of the building. It turns out that on the landing outside of the door to the men's floor, where I saw this shadowy image, there is a bit of a brick wall there, and there's an arch built into it. And it turns out that behind that brick wall was the wing of the prison where women and children were kept in the debtor's prison back in the day, and that is a history of shadowy images being seen coming in and out of that now bricked up wall. So that was my experience staying at the Ottawa jail and visiting death row, definitely feeling sort of creepiness on and off during the stay at different times, but seeing a shadowy figure that I was then able to confirm with other people's experience told online. Thanks a lot. My name is Mike Ross from Toronto, Ontario. Bye-bye.
There's a country above the United States. I didn't know that. The more you know.
Pay attention to ourselves.
Had no idea. I thought it was just like the world. I thought it like kind of stopped and it just kind of, you know, it's because everything's flat, you know.
Right. It just ends at North Dakota.
It's all a conspiracy.
So that is a weird place to go visit and for more than one day.
Yeah.
Like, that's just creepy. And it's so creepy to me. Like, okay, so last place there was a public hanging. Really creepy. And then it being a debtor's prison, which is so bizarre that people would go to prison for, you know, because basically because they're poor, because they couldn't pay for things.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how dare you not be able to pay for shit? We're throwing you in jail and your kids too.
Yeah, and then it's like, well, how do you expect them to pay for it? How does that work then? Do you earn money in jail and then that's how you pay it off?
Basically that. Okay. And you're slave labor.
Okay.
And like, so to me, it's just such a weird concept. And it would be just so dark and oppressive in a place like that.
Until Chip and Joanna Gaines get their hands on it and they turn it into debtor's prison at the mills. This season on HGTV, Chip and Joanna return. Shiplap, puppies, and guess what? Joanna's pregnant with quadruplets. She's planning on having them in lockdown, otherwise known as the breakfast nook, where she'll bake fresh bagels every single day, top them with cherry wood bacon and Chip's own signature bacon marmalade. Who doesn't love having a bacon bagel with marmalade, right where several people were executed with knives? It was a giant shanking that happened right there. 72 people perished in a violent fight in 1972. But now, thanks to Joanna, it's bright, cheery, and you're gonna love the bagels. That's this year on Chip and Joanna Take Over a Prison on HGTV.
No, that's on the Magnolia Network now, baby.
On Magnolia, the network you didn't know existed. That's right. We were going to kind of launch it, and then we started making a cooking show, and we quit our other show, and then we went to Discovery Plus, and then we're still in Target, but nobody really remembers who we are. We're kind of a big thing 10 years ago, and you can buy your vases, and I got a magazine that I'm on the cover of. Anyway, on Magnolia.
You know where the silos when you're in Waco.
Exactly.
It's kind of like what you just did, though, totally made me laugh. But there's some truth to it, too. It's like everything they're turning, which I love. Like, I love renovating places. Like, I'm totally addicted to all that. But it's not that far out of what the like they're doing.
Oh, shit. No, they're the one that comes to mind is in Traverse City, Michigan. Commerce that the what is it called? It's something at the Traverse City Commons is what it's called. And it's the old, insane asylum is what it was called back in the day. And it's these giant Gothic buildings and half of them are not renovated. They're just sitting there rotting away and you can look in the windows and the broken windows and just see the horrible conditions that these the cells, they're all there. They were like, you know, rooms, quote unquote, but it's just like, oh my God, cold, dank concrete. It wasn't like somebody went in there and like, let's rip all the drywall out. Like, no, this is how these buildings were. And some of them are now being turned into like luxury condos. One's a retirement center. There's gourmet restaurants. There's shopping. And it's cool as hell to visit. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, it's exactly what I just did. It's the exact same thing, except it's not a prison, but the asylums in a lot of cases were pretty much just as good.
And I mean, it's either like renovate it, keep it historically accurate and do what he did.
Yeah.
And you go visit, which I kind of appreciate more. Mm-hmm. But if the building is just going to be there empty and decaying and taking up space, I like the fact that you're able to reclaim it.
I like it.
Somewhat. Although I just don't think staying in that place would be very cheery and happy.
I think there's purposes for these things where we can learn their history, make them be modern day things that we can use. The restaurants, whatever. It is kind of uncomfortable though when you're sitting in a booth in the stone basement that kind of looks like it could be a wine cellar, but oh no, it was some place where someone was shackled to a wall. I saw there was literally, they used to have chain hooks on the walls where the tables were, but those have been removed since.
Because people complained at dinner. What is this?
Oh, yeah.
They used to hook people up to the walls. Would you like another glass of wine?
Exactly. The first time I was there, it had it on. And then I came back 15 years later and they were gone. But it's, I don't know. I like the preservation. I don't know that I would want to turn it into a place to stay overnight or have weddings at.
But we're talking about the plantations and I am fascinated by that. I have toured plantations.
Yeah.
But I just, in some of them, it's kind of weird. They have people who are on talking about the slaves dressed as slaves. Mm-hmm. I think it was This American Life did an episode of a girl who was one of those reenactors mm-hmm. for a summer. That would be really depressing because you can't put a happy spin on that.
Yeah.
It's okay, here come my group of people. This shit's going down.
Yeah.
Really down. You've been kind of happy going, the architecture, all this shit. Yeah. Now let's talk about the dark shit.
I know. It would be.
That would be so strange, but I would imagine your notes, if you will.
I'd imagine it happens,
as reenactors. You are an actor. And so it's okay, now we want you to be kind of up when you're talking about this. Don't be telling, making it super dark.
Yeah.
Stick to the script.
Yeah. Again, not a place that'd have a wedding. Preserve the history. I like that. But yeah, it's just there's some things you just don't want to do in those places. And that would be one of them. All right. That's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Get access to all the bonus episodes, advanced episodes, and more. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.